Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. The last show, we came to you guys with an instant reaction after the Seahawks lost their season opener to the Denver Broncos. Today, we've gotten to kind of analyze the game a little bit more. We're going to be coming a little more in-depth, focus on some different things. And so we got a pretty packed show for you guys today. You are familiar with this podcast, you're not. A quick intro is what we're going to do. I'm Grant Goldberg. I co-host this Locked On Seahawks podcast, and I do social media and graphic design work for SB Nation's Lakers site. And Spike is a writer with The Stranger and the world's foremost punt activist. And we're excited to talk. We're excited to talk some different position groups. We're going to focus on some high points, some low points, but mainly Michael Dixon and how high he kicked the ball and how far he kicked it and how accurately he did that.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here if this is your first Locked On Seahawks podcast. And I'm going to welcome you by doing the thing everybody loves, which is talking about my fantasy team. Guys, I needed Galladay. On the Lions. I need Kenny Galladay to outscore Matthew Stafford, Amari Cooper, and LeGarrette Blount. And he is well on his way with 13 minutes left. He's currently plus 16 on those three. So I am riding high right now. I am buzzing, and I am ready to talk Seahawks football. So
I'm just glad that, like, there was another team, too, in the Lions that just totally... I mean, not that the Seahawks played so terribly, but they could take the spotlight away from them on a national stage on Monday Night Football and against a team as young and a team as bad last year as the Jets were.
Yeah, let's be clear. What happened to the Seahawks week one was not some sort of disaster. I mean, right. They lost to a team that always wins at home early in the year. They were who we thought they were. You know, the line was 3 points. They lost by 3 points. The way in which it happened was frustrating. But I mean, watching this Raiders game right now, some of the frustrations we've had to deal with in years past in terms of offensive line penalties, you know, just we had a couple of them, but nothing like what Tom Cable has thrown out against.
He's not our problem anymore.
Yeah, we're free. We're finally free. We've broken out of the Shawshank prison that is Tom Cable, offensive line coach.
It's a team that looked young on Sunday afternoon. And, you know, whether that's good or bad, you know, you're going to see different things from them each and every Sunday. They're going to grow. They're going to develop. And there's going to be, you know, different high points and different learning experiences for a defense like that, especially when you have a guy like KJ Wright out, one of the more experienced guys on the team, and having him being replaced by a rookie in Shaquem Griffin.
Yeah, let's dive in by starting with talking about what Pete Carroll said today on 710. Every Monday, Pete Carroll goes on. Who is it now? Is it Brock and Danny still? I don't know.
Yeah,
Danny O'Neill.
Yeah, it's one of the two. I don't know.
Yeah, it's great local radio content. But something that he said about this defense was that they looked new and that they were giving up explosive plays. And that, and if you go back and look at the tape, that's 100% true. There were just too many big plays given up to a Denver Broncos team that shouldn't really be able to do that. Case Keenum is a lot of things, but a big play guy isn't one of them. But if you look at the Seahawks defense, I think what's going to define it this year is the turnover. And this is a weird analogy to draw, but I'm going to draw it anyway. Arsene Wenger, the former coach of Arsenal in the English Premier
League.
Yeah, he talked about how, and I think this might have been used to justify his team's poor transfer policy, but he talked about how each transfer window, you didn't want to integrate more than three guys into your 11-man starting squad. You didn't want to buy more than three starters because you'd lose continuity, you'd lose team chemistry. And when you look at the Seahawks defense, you can make an argument that only one starter from last year is really there playing a full preseason. I guess two. You've got Shaq Griffin and you've got Bobby Wagner. You've got Justin Coleman a little bit too. He starts a good amount. But even in Griffin's case, you're talking about a guy flipping the field, which is to say most snaps you're talking about 7, 8, 9 new faces on the field. And given what we've come to expect in terms of continuity from the Seahawks defense, and the level of inherent and implied communication that is able to get guys playing almost psychically with one another in terms of when to hand off a receiving route, you know, which direction to push a guy, how to be maneuvering as a unit. We don't have that right now. And that means that those explosives are going to be there, even if the opposing quarterback is Case Keenum, much less what we could face later in the year. Fortunately, next week we get Mitch Trubisky, who looks sort of schmedium in his first start. But for me, I think not only is this defense young, this defense is new to Pete Carroll's system in a way that is pretty extreme. And for me, the season starts week five. If we still have these errors after our bye week, then it's time to panic. Until then, we're going to make mistakes. And it's a bummer that this is the soft part of our schedule and we could lose some winnable games early and that could cost us a playoff spot at the end of the year. But that's the breaks for turning over your whole defense.
Yeah, and you know the way that the Seahawks lost this game, and it could be the way that they lose other games going forward in this early part of the season, it's going to be shooting themselves in their own foot. You mentioned the play of Case Keenum. He was exactly what we thought he'd be, if not worse. When the Broncos had explosive plays, the Seahawks, basically, it was at their own demise. They missed tackles, and it was kind of shoddy coverage, and they just ran all the way to the end zone, basically, off a short little pass, and Case Keenum turned the ball over three times on his own. And so, you know, they are opportunistic, they are hungry, but they're also kind of like puppy dogs running around with all this energy, and it's a little misguided right now.
Yeah.
And so with a little more time assimilating and gelling together under Pete Carroll's defense, and I think that they're going to look a little more composed later on in the season. But yeah, I think the bye week's a big part of the year for them to kind of take the time and grow that relationship as a defense. I know it's a terrible comparison and they're so different as defenses, but when you watch the way the Seahawks played defense over the last half decade, the Legion of Boom, they were just one unit. You know, you could talk about the pass rush, you could talk about the secondary, you could talk about the linebackers, but they were one unit and they played as one. They all had the same mentality, except Earl, because he's a little bit crazier and more locked in than everybody else. But they were bad as hell, and they knew it, and they were going to make you feel it. And now this defense, now there's still good players on the field, but there's a lot more holes, and it's going to take a lot more cohesive play for them to not look as patchy as they did.
Yeah, and let me also say that, you know, when I'm talking about continuity, I'm talking about guys who also had a full preseason. Yeah. And there's a degree to which Frank Clark, Deion Jordan, Bradley McDougald, Earl Thomas, these guys are going to come in, KJ Wright, hopefully. And again, by week five, be full strength, be ready to go, be ready to ball out. And if that is the case, then again, like those guys I just named are actually pretty good. You put those with Shaq Griffin, Bobby Wagner, you got a stew going. Yeah. So again, there's hope that this defense gels, and you know, maybe it's not the best unit in the league. It's not, I don't even think its ceiling is a top five unit, but bottom half of the, I don't know, 12th in the league is certainly
top half of the league. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like that is in play come week five. And until then, the offense is sort of going to have to ball out for us. But yeah, and speaking of the offense balling out for us, we're going to take a look at some PFF offensive statistics and really get deep and break that down for you guys coming up right after a real quick break here. This is the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Locked On Podcast Network. Guys, do you like betting on football? I do. I don't know who's going to win, but I like betting on the games. Anyway, I was wrong a lot this week. I thought the Saints were sure money. And maybe you were smarter than me and were like, obviously Ryan Fitzmagic is going to happen. And I'm going to put all my cash on the Bucks. And if that's you, if you're the guy who knew, you got to go to my bookie. Because remember, when you're betting, it's not just who you're betting on, it's who you're betting with. You need to know you're going to get paid out. You need to know you're with a reliable service that has a great app, that has in-game betting, has all the features, options you want, and also has a great promo code, Locked On, that will get you 100% bonus on your first deposit. That's a dollar for dollar match. So if you're like me and you're betting on the Saints and you think they're the lock of the week and then they lose by a lot and it isn't great, you can come back the next week and find a new lock and bet on that lock. I mean, this is a service that has worked for me. I've used my bookie. It's great. The live in-game betting, again, like if you were watching that Bears-Packers game and you see Aaron Rodgers walking back towards the field at halftime, you're like, man, let's fire this off. Aaron Rodgers is obviously going to come back. Boom. That is cash in your pocket. If you go to MyBookie, you can download the app, go to the website. Either way, MyBookie, 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 promo code locked on, dollar for dollar match. It's a site you can trust. It's a great place to gamble. MyBookie. Fantasy football is underway, and we have two fantasy football shows on the Locked On Network to help you out. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 gives you the latest news, waiver suggestions, and injury updates. Locked On Fantasy Football has experts and amazing guests every day. Monday, we're talking Tom Kucinich. Tuesdays, Eric Edholm. Wednesdays, Jeff Ratliff and Tyler Lochner. Two shows, Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi, we are back with the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we last left you teasing about some offensive stats from Pro Football Focus. And the first one I'm going to bring up is centered around Russell Wilson. And, you know, he's usually played very well under pressure. He's been able to get the ball out and get the ball out accurately. But he really struggled this Sunday in Denver when he faced pressure. Spike, what was the stat?
Yeah, on 18 pressured dropbacks, Wilson was sacked six times and was only 5 for 12 on attempts that he got off. 72 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick. And that's not Russell Wilson. And what's interesting to me about the statistic, it doesn't make me think that Russell Wilson is broken, although he suggested as much on the last podcast. But I don't think that that's what's going on. What I think is going on here is that not all pressure is created equally. And the pressure that Von Miller specifically brings with his combination of size and athleticism is extra disruptive. And we saw that when Wilson was trying to spin out of trouble, it just didn't work at all. Miller was there and he devoured him, caused a turnover, three sacks. I mean, just a monster. Just a monster in that game, which tells me that maybe our offensive line situation isn't as bad as it looks. Because if they give up that level of pressure, we can expect Russell Wilson to play better. I mean, his passing grade was 30.9 on pressure dropbacks. That's not Russell Wilson.
No.
I don't think Russell Wilson's broken. I think there's hope here. And I think that, the offensive line just needs to click a little harder for things to be okay.
Yeah, and it's another week to get that Sports Illustrated article out of his head, which really was the biggest catalyst if you look back on his performance, really zeroing in on that. No, but yeah, it was just so weird watching him just so flustered when there's pressure in the backfield, because he's usually so composed and he stands strong, or at least evades the pressure going, you know, laterally. And I don't, it's all just so weird to say given his history, but he has another opportunity coming up next week against the Chicago Bears to prove otherwise, because if he's historically that good against pressure, then it should be, well, I'm not going to say no problem against the Bears, but there's going to be pressure and there's going to be opportunities for him to deliver the ball when there's not just a four-man front getting pressure on him, but there's five men, six men coming at him. And so he's going to have an open guy downfield, hopefully, possibly. And so, yeah, I think that there's going to be more opportunities and we can just put this game behind us, hopefully.
Yeah, and we'll see, because, I mean, Khalil Mack is a monster, but he's a different type of monster than Von Miller. He's going to disrupt things from the inside. He disrupts things from the inside. The question is, are the Bears going to be rushing well off the edge? If they aren't, we know that Wilson can escape and make plays happen. The Broncos did an excellent job of preventing Russell Wilson from making big plays on the run to his lateral run, like you were saying. And he had two huge plays from there. And that actually brings us to our other big PFF offensive stat, which is Will Dissly is a baller.
Yeah.
He's a baller. Russell Wilson's passer rating when targeting Will Dissly was 143.8. Will Dissly had the highest ranking amongst receiving grades for all tight ends week one. And we knew Dissly can block, and he was about average. And given the caliber of the opponent, the fact that opponent adjustments aren't there yet, average is actually pretty dang good for Dissly as a blocker. The fact that he was so above average as a pass catcher, and a bunch of really big name tight ends, not named Rob Gronkowski, didn't do much. I mean, some guys got hurt. Greg Olsen is out for a while. Delanie Walker's out for the year. Jimmy Graham did nothing for Green Bay, regardless of who the quarterback was. Meanwhile, Will Disley's putting up a hundo and a touchdown and could have had more. What a world we're living in. What a wonderful world, Grant.
And here's the thing, and the only drawback from this is that maybe it makes the Ed Dixon signing obsolete, but when you have stellar level tight end play, it can help the Seahawks in so many ways, whether it be Zach Miller-esque run blocking or, you know, a tight end who can actually run down the field and not just have to jump ball in the red zone, in the end zone. And so it was just so nice to see him so active and mobile, because that wasn't what I gathered from watching him when the Seahawks drafted him. He shedded tacklers like it was almost nothing. They bounced off of him like a pinball. And so I was just in shock, basically. When he ran and broke all those tackles and nearly scored a touchdown, I just had my jaw dropped, clapping by myself watching the game, which was insane to watch, insane to do by myself. And it's going to make me sound like a loser, but you can't be a loser watching Will Dissly play football.
No, I think that is a fact. I'm really excited about some of these young skill position guys. I mean, Lockett, it was nice to see him have a big play. He's still not doing much in the return game. But yeah. I mean, when you look at Dissly and you look at Carson, and then, I mean, he ain't young, but he is new. You look at Brandon Marshall, you see some weapons that are going to be fun this year. And, you know, we keep saying, let's at least have some fun. If this team is going to be medium, which is what Grant still thinking playoffs. I'm thinking 7-9. Neither of us is thinking this is the Bills. You know what I mean? This isn't the Lions. This isn't a disaster. You know, so we're in a position where I'm like, all right, let's have fun. Let's watch guys get better. Hopefully one of those guys is Will Dissly.
Yeah, and you know, tracking back to the Russell Wilson conversation just for a second before we take a quick break. You know, I was disappointed watching his fourth quarter performance, and you know, we're going up against the Seahawks are going up against a team in the Chicago Bears.
You can say we, Greg.
That just squandered a 20-point lead to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and it has me thinking, you know, if it comes down to being a close game, which it very well might be, the Seahawks didn't look like absolute crap, and the Bears look like a legitimate team that can make noise in the NFC. You know, they put up, you know, they went up 20-0 in Lambeau. And so I have the thought that Russell Wilson can redeem himself in the fourth quarter this Monday night. He can find himself maybe down going into the fourth, or the game is tied, but when it comes down to, you know, 3 minutes left, 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, he's going to have opportunities, and he has done better than he did on Sunday in the past, and he's going to have more opportunities, and another opportunity can present itself against the Chicago Bears this Monday.
Yeah. All right, I think that's great. I think we're going to take another quick break. We're going to talk some defense, and we're going to talk some Michael Dixon, again, getting into the numbers with some PFF stats. We are going to be back right after this, Locked On Seahawks, Grant and Spike on the Locked On Podcast Network.
The Locked On Network is expanding with college shows. Coming this week, Locked On Wolverines, Locked On Buckeyes, and Locked On Seminoles. Plus, we already have Locked On Ducks, Locked On Nittany Lions, Bears, Crimson Tide, Wildcats, Razorbacks, Volunteers, and Cougars. Find your favorite college show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, all on the Locked On Podcast Network. Welcome back to the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. We're finishing this thing out with Grant and Spike, and Michael Dixon was just phenomenal on Sunday. We talked about it right after the game, but the stats are there to back it up. Best player in the league. Tell us why, Spike.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a 69-yard long for his punt, and
Nice.
you said, yeah, A, it's nice. B, it was the longest in the league. C, you're talking about a what 58-plus yard average, an average that only Johnny Hecker of the Rams has reached in any games last year. I mean, like Dixon's first game of his entire career would have been the second best game in the entire NFL last season. I mean, that tells you all you need to know. And he left some yards on the field. Like, he is not dialed all the way in. And something I really recommend watching is they did a mic'd up of him in this preseason
Oh,
game.
I sent that to you, by the way.
Did you? I
I
didn't.
did.
I never watched it when you sent it to me. And then I discovered it on my own last night. So, hey, buddy, I'm a hero. But it is like it's really worth watching to see Dixon's personality, to see the respect that he's already garnered from the veterans, to see how Bobby Wagner reaches out to him, and to see just like the culture clash of him like barely understanding American football at times and having Tyler Ott explain like the rules of the NFL to him. It's kind of amazing. But then you watch his discipline. He's fastidious with the nets. That's a really cool and fun little thing. It's like how much he cares, how specific he is in his preparation. It tells you why he's such an artisan as a punter. It's really thrilling. I'm so psyched he's on our
Well,
team, man.
yeah, and the thing was, when I was watching it, he's very critical of himself, and
Yeah.
you get the vibe around him on the sideline and even in warm-ups that he's pretty laid back and easygoing, but when it comes to game time, he's very critical of himself. And you see the punt, the one punt against the Broncos where he didn't strike it very well. You could tell it didn't just sit well with him, and he proceeded to, send a 50-plus yard punt all the way to the 2-yard line after that, which is just astronomical. I think that Michael Dixon garners the respect of every NFL fan, from here on out, because you see what kind of respect Johnny Hecker
Yeah.
gets, and what, for all intents and purposes, Johnny Hecker has been the best punter in the league up to this year. Now, Michael Dixon came into the NFL with one goal, and that's just to destroy the NFL. And so when you have a punter in Johnny Hecker who just wants to punt the football well and kind of have fun with the game, that's all fine and dandy. But when you have a guy who literally invaded from another nation, from another continent, to come and just dominate other human beings in a sport, not for fun, but to get paid for it. I don't know. I just don't think that you can compete with a guy like that.
Yeah, I agree. I love that take. I love that we get to play Hecker twice this year. It's just going to be a punt off. I can't wait. Speaking of aliens from other places invading, before we wrap the show up, let's talk some Earl Thomas stats. He
Jeez.
had yeah, I mean, he was incredible. He was the highest graded safety by PFF in week one. And PFF frequently is underrated Earl Thomas. Maybe it's because of the drop picks. Maybe it's because teams just don't go to center field against him very often because it's scary. But he dominated that game. I mean, Harrison Smith balled out for Minnesota. So the fact that Earl Thomas was even better by the grades just tells you how unbelievable Earl is. We talked a little bit. It was really quick after last episode about the per yard per play per yard when he was yards per play, sorry, when he was on the field versus when he was off the field, and it was double. It was double.
Yeah.
When he was off the field, the Broncos went twice as far every time they snapped the ball. Tells you all you need to know. Again, Earl Thomas is an alien. He's the best safety in the league. He's the most important player on the Seahawks defense, even above Bobby Wagner, whom I love and is fantastic. The fact that we're not paying Earl Thomas is mind-boggling. Also, credit where credit is due, Bradley McDougal played very well. We have an elite safety duo, and it's going to keep us in games that we might otherwise not deserve to be kept in this year.
Yeah, they each caused turnovers, and they're by far the most consistent group on the field for the Seahawks defense. And so when you have that kind of stability in, center field, or coming up to play in the run, there's something you can build around. There's a sense of security when you have players like that backing you up behind you. And so, yeah, credit to them. Credit to Earl Thomas for, you know, coming back for his teammates, coming back for himself too. You know, that's important to, you know, be able to play the game that you love and be able to at least for a little bit put the semantics to the side and just go out there for your team, go out there for yourself and have fun with it and make a difference. But, you know, Earl Thomas, you know, I said this yesterday, they scored touchdowns only when Earl Thomas was not on the field. And so I just think that there's no reason that the Seahawks shouldn't be paying him, but you know, for some reason they aren't. It's mind-boggling. I don't know. It renders me speechless.
Well, and yeah, and if they were going to trade him, they should have done it before Dallas realized they were terrible. You know, like, Dallas has no reason to trade for him. They're in a similar position to us as, like, a pretty medium team in a very deep conference where investing a big pick, like, we wouldn't acquire Sheldon Richardson right now the way we did last year just because of our overall outlook. I think Dallas is in a similar place. We're not moving on from him. That said, you know, keep him. You know, if we end up just getting a third-round comp pick for him, it's not the end of the world. I'd rather see Earl Thomas play out his time with the Seahawks personally, even if that isn't the rational choice. All right. So we've got a couple more great episodes coming up this week. We've got our big preview at the end of the week. But before that, I just want to tease the fact that we've got Lauren Cox and Locked On Bears. We're going to do a crossover episode tomorrow night because it's going to come out on Tuesday. So tomorrow night is Wednesday night. Crossover episode with Locked On Bears. Those guys are great. That team is really fascinating. If you guys watched Sunday Night Football, you know how interesting and how good in some ways and bad in others that Bears team is. And so I think it's going to be a really great conversation, a really great episode.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be a really great game to boot, hopefully. And so, yeah, tune in on Monday Night Football for when the Seahawks go to play the Chicago Bears. It's going to be fascinating to watch them try to rebound from this loss. In the meantime, make sure you're listening to this Locked On Seahawks podcast. Make sure you're leaving 5-star reviews on iTunes and reaching out to us on Twitter and Facebook. We have Locked On Seahawks on Facebook and a Locked On Seahawks group that you can join. So take advantage of that because we always want to hear your feedback.
And I'm mostly just posting a couple of hot Michael Dixon memes a week. So you really want those, you need them. Follow us.
There you go. That's all the reason you need. So for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.